Every year when I enter a store and see the first inkling of the holidays, whether it be a single tree, a splotch of red, or a display that houses snowman ornaments, a sense of dread settles over me like a peppermint-flavored miasma. It's that time of year when there are songs about casual sexual coercion veiled as Christmas music on the radio, and boomers are telling me I should be jolly. No other holiday elicits such nosiness and intrusion. Why don't you put a smile on your face? It's Christmas! No, Karen, I will not. I'm just going to buy some laundry detergent and a slice of cake before I go back into the blistering cold to drive home in a freezing car that will finally warm up as I pull into my driveway. Or it's not cold enough and there's no snow, and I know that when summer comes around, it won't be just irresponsible hunters and gender reveal parties that will cause wildfires. And then there's the gross consumerism driven by the capitalist quagmire we are all entrenched in. It's fitting that Fear Street Silent Night takes place in a department store. A multi-story temple to excess from the 80s is a perfect symbol of Christmas. So get under a blanket and read this cozy tale of murder with me. This is rereading my childhood, Fear Street, Silent Night. Our protagonist, Reva Dalby, is, to put it mildly, a bitch. She works in her father's department store at the perfume counter and spends her time making fun of the customers. This isn't what makes her a bitch. I have no problem with Reva's animosity toward customers. I understand it. As someone who has worked retail, the job would be great except for the customers, especially today when every terrible person thinks they should be allowed to wander in and abuse the hourly workers. What makes her terrible is her laziness and rich girl entitlement. Her boss asks her to stock something and she refuses to do it, invoking her father's name. She's as bad as the customer who says, "You need to give me this whole thing for free because I have an expired coupon and the customer is always right." Anyway, while she's not working and making fun of customers, she puts on her lipstick. She puts the color to her lips and she starts bleeding. Someone has slipped a needle into her lipstick. We go back 2 weeks and Reva is breaking up with her terrible boyfriend, Hank. Once, he'd punched his fist through a screen door because she refused to go to a dumb Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with him. That's not great. When she breaks up with him, he flips out and demands to know why she is breaking up with him. She says that there is someone more interesting and he doesn't like that. He says, "You'll be sorry about this, Reva." He grabs her and yanks her around. For some reason, she's the bad guy in this scene. What? Hank is the one yelling and grabbing at her, and she is cold, so she's portrayed as the bad guy. We're entirely too casual about domestic abuse now, and I think things have gotten better. Think about how bad things were back then. How's that for your 90s nostalgia? Anyway, after Reva breaks up with Hank, she goes to visit her father at the department store. There, in the dark, someone touches her from behind. She spins around and comes face to face with a man. A mannequin, that is. Prepare yourself. This is not the last of the mannequin-based scares. As she heads to her father's office, the previous security guard, Mr. Wakely, rushes past her. Her father just fired him because Mr. Wakely was drinking on the job. Also, Mr. Dalby needs some cheap labor, kids, to work during the holidays. They can make extra spending money, and Mr. Dalby can add another story to his mansion. Reva offers a job to Mitch, the boy she's currently smitten with. Then his girlfriend, Lisa with two S's, asks for a job. Reva tells her to dress nice and to show up to work at the perfume counter. Reva's cousin Pam also asks for a job, and Reva tells her that there aren't any positions, which is a lie, and Pam knows it's a lie. Pam is so upset she calls her boyfriend Foxy. We'll get to him later. Then she hangs out with her two friends, Chad and Mikey, the latter of which is Mr. Wakely's son. Remember? The guy who was fired? Anyway, Pam, Chad, and Mikey, whom Stein just has to tell us has bad complexion because of the chocolate he eats, goes to 7-Eleven. At the counter, the cashier, whom Stein just has to tell us is chubby, tells Chad to empty his pockets. Chad insists that there's nothing in them, and then the cops show up. The three amigos jump into Pam's car, and then there's a police chase. They lose the cops, and then Chad reveals that he had some jalapeno dip in his pocket. They were almost arrested over jalapeno dip. Some fucking craft shit from 7-Eleven. Kids, do crimes better. At school the next day, the last person to ask Reva for a job is Rob, a big guy whom Reva thinks is perfect for Santa. She tells him it's a public relations job, and he seems excited. She couldn't wait until Saturday morning. Rob would just show up in a suit and tie, no doubt, ready to begin his important public relations job, only to be handed a bright red Santa costume, complete with beard, wig, and stupid pointy hat. And Lisa would be standing there in her glitziest dress and be sent to the stockroom to unload boxes and stock shelves. They'll be mortified, Reva thought, grinning from ear to ear. Mortified. Congratulating herself on her cleverness, she pulled into her driveway, heading along the row of tall hedges to the four-car garage and back. I don't think she knows what clever means. While Reva is home, Hank comes over to ask for a job. She refuses and then he gets angry. Once again, she is written as the bad guy while we're supposed to be sympathetic to a man who yells that she'll be sorry for not giving him a job. There's a passing mention that he can be nice, but the only times we see Hank are when he's dressed like a background dancer in Grease and grabbing at women. The big day arrives and Lisa shows up in a nice outfit only to be told that she should go home and change because she's in the stockroom. Frankly, I'd rather be in the stockroom because customers are terrible, and I'd rather wear comfortable clothes, but Lisa is all, "The extra S is not for stockroom," and is upset that she has to take inventory. Also, Rob is upset that he has to be Santa Claus, but he's open to enjoying the job. The store opens up and Reva is pulled from behind. It's Hank, and he grabbed her to inform her that he got a security job at the department store. So he's grabbing people from behind now, and still, somehow, Reva is the bad guy. Yeah, Reva is a jerk, but Hank is a muscular guy yelling at her and leaving marks on her arm. Meanwhile, Pam is talking to Clay and Mikey. She says that Foxy got a job at Dalby's, and that prompts Clay to reveal a way for Pam and Mikey to get revenge and have a nice Christmas. "I've already worked it out with the night security guard at Dalby's," Clay whispered excitedly, leaning close to Pam and Mikey. "I'm going to rob the store." "Oh shit, a traditional Christmas heist. What's the plan, Clay?" "Maywood said he'd open the back door and let me in. Then he said he'd let me take whatever I wanted. No problem. He'll even stand guard for me."
Is that the whole plan? And it took two of you to figure this out?
Maybe I shouldn't have such high expectations for heists in these books. Pam is apprehensive, but all she has to do is drive the getaway car. It seems that all three of them are in, and Pam thinks that since Clay has everything planned out, what could go wrong? She's right. What could go wrong with a plan concocted by a teenager and a department store night guard that can be summed up in two sentences? Two weeks pass. Reva has been dropping not-so-subtle hints to Mitch. Finally, Reva walks up and kisses Mitch. Just a mild case of assault. Unfortunately for Mitch, Lisa sees their embrace, and she is all, "The extra S is for stay away from me." Mitch chases after Lisa, and Reva calls him a wimp. Then she remarks, "But at least he'll be my wimp soon." Okay, Reva. Cool line. Reva goes back to her counter, and there is a present for her. It's a bottle of cologne. She picks it up and sprays it on herself. It's blood, and now her cashmere sweater is ruined. Is she worried about whose blood it is? No, just the sweater thing. She thinks that Hank sent the bottle of blood, so she rushes over to his security station and starts yelling the second she gets there. Of course, Hank says he didn't send her anything, but Reva still vows to get him fired. As she's waiting for her father, the sudden sound of machine gun fire echoes through the department store. Don't worry, it's just some Christmas lights popping. The thought of machine gun fire in a department store reads differently now, and the scene is the most unsettling thing that happens in this book, even if it wasn't actually gunfire. It has not aged well. Reva ends up not getting Hank fired, but her father does tell her that she should go home and change. Well, first he says that she should get something from the store that, you know, they're currently in. She says she would never wear clothes from a store as tacky as Dalby's, but she'll definitely have the same name and work there, though. She heads home, and a white Ford Taurus starts following her. It even speeds up when Reva speeds up. It makes the same wild turns as Reva. It follows her all the way home and traps her in her driveway. Then a man gets out of the Taurus and runs after her. "I accidentally smashed into your taillight. I'm really sorry," the man said, taking off his cap and wiping the perspiration off his broad forehead. "I hate it when people bump into your car and then just drive off," the man explained, replacing his cap. "So I followed you. I was trying to signal you. Didn't you see me?"
Dude, I think that's noble, but if the person is flying around corners like they're about to talk about the importance of family, you should just let them go.
Over on the poor side of town, it's time for Pam and company to execute their brilliant heist plan. Pam drives the C's 11T to the department store without any trouble, and she parks in the designated loading dock. This is when Clay reveals that he has a gun just in case. This is America. I'd expect them all to have guns, but Pam is noticeably worried. Also, the night guard who is supposed to be their lookout is nowhere to be seen. In fact, no one is in the department store. The trio proceeds to the electronics section to get a 90s stereo that costs the down payment on a house and can record off the radio. It's not all smooth sailing. Suddenly, they hear another voice. It's a different security guard and he's threatening to shoot them over one of those wavy CD racks. This is what America is about. The murder of underprivileged teens over petty merchandise that will be tacky in 10 years.
The kids run away, and the guard sounds the alarm. Then Pam hears a gunshot. "Clay, no!" Mikey shrieked from right beside her. Pam watched the guard go down, clutching his bloody chest, falling like a heavy sack of flour. And now Clay, still holding the pistol, his face twisted in horror, was running to catch up with Pam and Mikey. They run out to the loading dock, but Pam's car is missing. Oh, they're at the wrong dock. Their car is in the next loading dock. Pam drives everyone home in silence. The next day, Pam checks the newspaper. The guard was killed and $25,000 was stolen, but they hadn't opened a safe or anything. Pam calls Clay and asks him if he took the money. He has some questions about the robbery himself. "My gun wasn't loaded," Clay repeated. "I just carried it for show." "You didn't shoot him?" "No way," Clay said, sighing loudly. "No way." "That means," Pam started, closing her eyes, trying to think. "That means someone else killed the guard," Clay finished her sentence for her. "And someone else took the money." Back at the store, Mr. Dalby talks to Reva about the robbery. She's only half listening, but she does hear that the security guard was shot in the back. Mr. Dalby wonders why the security guard would turn his back on the thieves. While Reva is working, Mitch says that Lisa broke up with him, leaving him free to date Reva. Reva responds by rejecting him, and he yells that she can't do this to people. Well, technically, Mitch, she didn't do it to people, she did it to a person. It's a dick move on Reva's part, but I've never seen two individuals make out accidentally, and I think this is just a plot contrivance that only exists in teen comedies. He leaves, and Reva gets a call from Pam, which she rejects, and a big present, which she opens, despite every gift in the book being a horrible prank. This time, it's a body! A mannequin, that Reva insists looks real. While all that mannequin stuff happens, Pam gets a call from someone with a rough voice that says that they saw what Pam did and they want their share of $10,000. She tells Foxy what's going on, robbery, blackmail, everything. She also tells Clay, who threatens to kill the voice on the phone. Reva goes to confront Hank about his present-based pranks. He continues to insist that he's not the one sending her gifts. "I feel sorry for you." His words stung like a slap in the face. She uttered a low cry. "You feel sorry for me?" She felt like laughing and crying at the same time. "I don't understand," she managed to say, confused by her strong feelings. "Anyone could have sent you those things," Hank explained. "You don't have a friend in the world, Reva. Everyone hates you. Everyone. I can think of 10 people who hate you enough to put a needle in your lipstick." "I feel sorry for you," Hank repeated, not backing off, not letting her off the hook. "You don't have a friend in the world." Reva bursts into tears and talks about how hard she became when her mother died. Hank comforts her. Sure, he's nice now, but what will he do when you don't want to watch the latest offering from Paul W.S. Anderson? Dent your car? Pam needs to talk to Reva, but first, she has to be kidnapped. The voice on the phone is physically behind her and he demands $10,000. She turns around and discovers who has been blackmailing her. Does she let us, the audience, know who it is? No, but she does tell Foxy. The next day, Reva is proud of herself for showing up to work 10 minutes early, a virtue only a boomer would think is a good thing. "Hey, I used to show up to work 15 minutes early every day. Was I treated better than the coworker who showed up 10 minutes late every day while holding a Starbucks cup?" "No. The same customers yelled at us, and we were paid the same shitty wage with no benefits, and if your grandmother was in the hospital, you still have to go to work. Don't put in extra effort. The ones above you don't." "No, I'm not bitter at all." Anyway, she comes to work and Rob and Mitch are fighting in the stockroom. The stockroom manager tells them to solve it after work. Later, Reva takes her little brother to see Rob slash Santa, and Reva figures out that it's not Rob in the Santa suit after Michael says that Santa is wearing a pillow. At work, Reva gets another big present. This time, it's not a mannequin disguised as a dead body, it's an actual dead person. Mitch has been murdered, and Reva knows who did it. She pins the murder on Rob. He must have slipped away to murder Mitch instead of going to work. The police show up and arrest Santa. Merry Christmas, kids! Santa's in handcuffs. And his lawyer is an elf and not one of the smart ones, so Christmas is canceled. Pam shows up and is all, "He didn't kill Mitch! He snuck away so we could awkwardly do some over-the-close petting behind the women's shoes!" See, Foxy and Rob are the same person. Foxy told me that he'd been doing mean things to frighten you, playing cruel jokes. He said he put a needle in your lipstick, and he sent you things. A cologne bottle, a mannequin in a box. I told him it was silly, but he was so angry at the way you treated me, at how awful you were to me, and how you tricked him into being Santa Claus, how you humiliated him in front of everyone. Reva avoided Pam's eyes. "But that's all he did," Pam continued. "You've got to believe me. He didn't kill Mitch. I know he didn't. I know he couldn't." Okay, the cologne bottle and the mannequin are whatever, but the needle in the lipstick is an actual assault. Is there a single dude in this book that isn't a murderer, a blackmailer, a thief, a wall puncher, a casual assaulter, or a capitalist? And Reva is the bad guy? Well, sort of. Like a modern Disney villain, the real killer shows up in the third act. It's Mr. Wakely. Who? Exactly. Mr. Wakely is Mickey's dad. You know, the one who was laid off at the beginning of the book and spends his time drinking? That one. What happened was that Maywood, the security guard who was supposed to help the kids, was helping Mr. Wakely, who was going to rob the store safe. However, the other security guard showed up, and Mr. Wakely saw the guard raise his gun at Mickey. Mr. Wakely shot the guard to protect his son, and then he killed Mitch because he was blackmailing Mikey. Finally, he stashed the body in a nearby container that Reva just happened to open. Now Mr. Wakely has to kill Reva because she knows too much. He lunges at her, she ducks, and he falls over a railing. Reva is a dynamic character, and I kind of liked her. It's novel to get a Stein protagonist with a clear character arc. He usually employs static slasher archetypes. Reva herself is a slasher archetype, the spoiled rich bitch who usually gets killed somewhere toward the beginning of the second act. In this one, she realizes how she's been treating people and vows to change. However, Mr. Wakely's death is vertically dependent. Instead, a situation should arise that would force Reva to sacrifice herself to save her cousin from Mr. Wakely. Or even better, because Reva turned over a new leaf and reconciled with her cousin, Pam should have aided in Reva's escape. As for the other characters, Pam and Rob are the most sympathetic ones. Pam's given a lot to do, and I liked the Foxy-Rob connection. However, Rob's pranks would be acceptable if it weren't for the needle one. It's a good scare, but Rob literally drew blood with that one. My patience for slasher tropes of unlikable men and fakeouts was exacerbated in this novel. Also, Christmas isn't necessarily a major factor. And nothing is silent, nor does silence affect the plot in any way, as the title of the book would suggest. Overall, however, this is one of the better Fear Street books. We have actual character growth, twists that make sense, and a coherent plot. Reva has an actual arc, and the side characters are distinct and interesting. The plot twists make sense, and there are indications of the twist throughout the book. And finally, the way everything comes together in the third act and all the plot lines are wrapped up with a neat bow is satisfying. This book is for those of us who wish October was an extra 2 months. So for me, I hope you stay warm and safe, you're vaccinated, and you have a very happy holiday season. This is coming out in April, I know that. But thank you for listening anyway.